Hey, this is Tom Webster, and this is Sounds Profitable for Tuesday, November 8th, 2022. Radio's 7 Warnings for the Podcast Industry, Part 2. This episode is sponsored by Red Circle. Red Circle makes host-read advertising simple and scalable with a full-service platform. Book ads across hundreds of independent podcasts in just minutes. Just click the link in the show notes to get started now. Podcasting has had its share of bad press over the past couple of months, but I've seen this movie before in the radio industry. This week, I'm going to continue my thoughts from last week about what podcasting can learn from radio's worst mistakes. Last week, I talked about some of the horrible warnings that podcasting can heed from commercial radio's worst mistakes, including spot loads, talent development, and my favorite, allowing the press to paint the industry with one brush based on the actions of a few. Well, that's three hopefully pretty useful lessons, but I promise 7. And I'm good at math, so here we go with part 2. Number 4, never be content with content. Now, this one I am particularly passionate about. When I was a super young researcher in the radio business, I was incredibly lucky to be involved with really two of the biggest success stories in radio history, both of them in New York City. The renaissance of powerhouse top 40 station Z100 and the launch of the Beat of New York WKTU. Now, these were massive feathers in my cap at a pretty young age, and I learned a ton from the brilliant teams behind those stations. I'll get to WKTU in a second, but one of the things that I'll never forget about my time with Z100 in those days, and back then it was owned by Evergreen Media, which became AM/FM. It was later bought by Clear Channel, which is now iHeart. I didn't work for it under that regime. But one of the things I'll never forget was the enormous commitment to programming research from the station, Z100, and the whole team at Evergreen and AM/FM. My humble role there was in testing the music and also the morning show content. For music testing, every single quarter, I would travel to 3 separate locations in the New York area, somewhere in New Jersey, Manhattan, and Long Island. And I would test over 600 songs with 100 Z100 listeners in every location. Now, this alone was nearly a $200,000 annual expenditure. But music turns over so quickly on a top 40 station that you really had to have it dialed in every single week before Macarena goes bad quicker than the avocado on your counter, and it did. In addition to all of this music testing, I also did annual focus group work on the morning show, which was Elvis and Elliot at the time, and now it's, of course, just Elvis Duran. And we also did annual market surveys on the overall position of the station. It's no exaggeration to say that Z100 spent several $100,000 every year on getting the content right. And that didn't include sales research, and it didn't include the fees paid to Arbitron, which is now Nielsen, for ratings research. And the thing is, I didn't just do this work for New York City. I was doing this for other stations in the group, from Buffalo to Charlotte. This company was enormously successful in the ratings. I'll never forget my time with Evergreen, Chancellor, AM/FM, that whole conglomerate. Because, yeah, we had fantastic talent, but we also had the benefit of a continual content and programming research plan that ensured that these stations were always on the pulse of those markets. Now, today, it's funny to me when I hear the uninitiated complain about radio sounding too researched. Radio in 2022 has never been less researched. I'm sure you could pick apart a correlation graph between overall quarter hours of listening per market with the amount spent on content research in those markets. You know, like you can pick apart those graphs correlating murder rates and ice cream sales, which I can help you with. But there is nonetheless a relationship there. Radio stopped doing this research at any kind of scale years ago, and there's no doubt that the product has suffered, especially with younger listeners, and I'll have more to say about that in a moment. In podcasting, we're not quite there yet, I don't think. Now, I've spent most of my 18-year career in podcasting, either conducting basic currency metric research, which, you know, counting listeners, or in researching sales and advertising effectiveness. And those are certainly important, and they're the most closely tied to getting revenue now. But if podcasting wants to continue to grow, it can't ignore content research forever. Every time a listener finishes a short-run series or just stops listening to an ongoing show, it's an opportunity to re-engage with them and find out where their heads are at in the hopes of meeting their entertainment and information needs maybe tomorrow. I don't think podcasting has screwed this up yet, per se, but I will say that when no one is doing this kind of research, the first players to do it in any medium win big, and they win quickly. I've seen it in every other medium, and I hope to see it in podcast. Number five, no one will thank you for killing their joy. The other New York success story that I worked on, WKTU, became really one of the most successful radio launches in the history of the medium. Our company had purchased the station when it was WYNY, a country station, but country was a pretty tough sell in mid-1990s New York City. I did a ton of music research that went into the decision to flip that format to dance. And I'll never forget just how great that station sounded from the moment it went on the air. In my time working with that station, I got to work with really some of the biggest talent in the radio industry. The morning show was RuPaul and Michelle Visage, who's now on RuPaul's Drag Race. I even got thanked when the station went on the air by the president of the company. And that, you know, I was a kid. I was a 20-something kid. I was as over the moon as you could possibly imagine. But something still bothers me about that period in my career. My company at the time, as I mentioned, wasn't able to sell WYNY, the country station, in the market, even though this was peak Garth Brooks time. So the decision was made to flip formats, and it was a huge financial success. The station was flipped in the same way that many other format changes were done and continue to be done in radio, in secret, in the middle of the night. You went to bed listening to country, and you woke up listening to CNC Music Factory. And in between, there was what the industry calls stunting, various things that they do on the air to warn you that things are not going to be as they seem very, very soon. In the case of WYNY, the station played every hour a variety of simulcasts from some of the other stations owned by our company in other cities. And then they just switched to a simple heartbeat for a while before WKTU came on the air. Fun. Unless you loved country music. And then not so fun. And here's the thing. Even though the company couldn't sell country music in New York City, more humans listened to that country station than any other country radio station on the planet. True fact. What might be the number one format in Houston was scrapping for 25th in New York, but that didn't change the fact that in the biggest city in America, hundreds of thousands of humans loved WYNY, loved country. And they were pissed that they woke up to Lisa Stansfield. They didn't get the memo. Now, it's generally viewed as a positive in the radio industry to blow off existing audience as cleanly and as quickly as possible to get a read on the new station. But that's a company benefit. That's not a listener benefit. The only thing WKTU did for country fans in New York was create ill will. I think about this a lot in the context of podcasting. In particular, I was reminded of this when a bunch of Gimlet and Parcast shows were canceled by Spotify, resulting in the layoff of some pretty talented podcasters. Now, I'm not here to comment on whether or not these layoffs were warranted or even about how they were handled. That's Spotify business. There have been a lot of articles talking about how the laid off employees feel about this, but I haven't seen much about how the listeners of those shows feel about this. Though reportedly the audience for shows like How to Save a Planet declined when they were made Spotify exclusive, which makes sense, they still had audiences. And those audiences presumably enjoyed the show a great deal and made it a part of their daily media diet or everyday media diet. Next month, they'll look for a new episode and it just won't be there. For a platform company like Spotify, they probably won't lose a user. But users are indeed the language of platforms. The audience for those shows will wake up to an unwelcome change with no alternative paths. Yet there's no more important resource for an audience-based medium than the audience you already have. Podcasts are going to come and go over the years. We're going to have podcasts start. We're going to have podcasts get canceled. But the humans who choose to listen are always the most important asset. What I hope is that going forward, the podcast industry recognizes just how precious existing listeners are. And when those difficult decisions about a show have to be made, something's going to happen to those existing listeners. And I think publishers can do a lot more than just cross-promote the next show. They can actually attempt to communicate with them and win them over anew. I like to think about the title of one of my favorite songs by Snow Patrol. What if this is all the love you'll ever get? You do a couple things differently, I'd bet. When we have to let listeners down, we must never forget that unless something is done to value and respect them immediately, they aren't coming back. And in a down year, we don't have listeners to waste. Number 6, you don't start smoking at 30. Radio is still holding its own with adults 45 and particularly 55 years and older in this country. And by the way, I expect that to continue for a while. Radio has largely punted 13 to 34-year-olds, but it does a pretty good job satisfying older audiences who are looking largely to radio for a lean-back utility mood service. The problem, though, is that Father Time is undefeated. You can ask 2022 Tom Brady about that. Eventually, those 55-year-olds age out of radio's sales data, and those 25-year-olds turn 35. Now, some people in the industry think that those younger people will age into radio as commutes and families and careers grind them down into more passive media consumers, but I don't think that's the case. Mostly, I doubt this because, as I said, radio is not researching the needs, wants, and desires of today's 13 to 29-year-olds. They have well and truly punted on that. When they eventually hit radio's money demographics, the medium is going to be handed a huge cohort of humans that have done just fine without radio and about whom they understand very little. I remember once doing a tiny bit of work connected with public television years ago, and they were grappling with the same problem. But when I looked at the TV schedule for the local PBS TV station on a Friday afternoon, it went straight from Dragon Tales to Washington Week in Review, like ages 10 to 64 didn't even exist. I worry about the 13 to 29 age group in podcasting. Now, we have seen a surge here due in particular to Spotify highlighting podcasts and specifically to Joe Rogan. And I know a lot of podcasting publishers are very focused on kids and family right now. But I currently own and operate a 17-year-old. In fact, today he's 18-year-old. I operate an 18-year-old human. And podcasting does not understand him. I don't understand him. Very few publishers have cracked the code on teens and young adults, but we need to. We can't just assume that they'll graduate from YouTube to This American Life once they hit 35. Podcasting has the talent to make hits here, but we need to invest and take a risk. And number 7, never forget Joey Bag of Donuts. Finally, this touches on something I mentioned in the podcast just a couple of weeks ago. Podcasting doesn't do a great job marketing itself, except on other podcasts. And this, too, is something the radio industry can provide us with a horrible warning about. In the most competitive days of local radio, there were always TV campaigns and other clever marketing initiatives happening in every market. WBEB in Philadelphia, they were Easy 101 at the time, I think, coasted along for years on the backs of the station dropping off radios at offices and other workplaces that only received Easy 101. Now, radio does still buy some outdoor advertising, which I submit would be cost effective and, well, just plain effective for podcasting as well. And it doesn't have to be national. If a billboard on I-95 between Baltimore and Philly got you 100,000 new listeners over the course of a campaign, I don't think you'd care that it was a local campaign. But I also miss radio marketing itself on local TV. I miss Joey Bag of Donuts. You can Google that one. Find the video on YouTube, or we'll pop a link in the show notes. Joey Bag of Donuts was this guy that I originally saw this on Chicago's WLUP, The Loop. But a number of radio stations use this spot of just a guy in a T-shirt, overweight guy with a hat on, kind of dancing to a boombox. In a funny way. And that was the entire spot. And of course, it came up with the call letters for the station. It was unforgettable. Every station in every market that used this particular spot got a lot of mileage out of Joey Bag of Donuts. When radio stopped doing that, and they did. They lost a fair amount of their personality and branding power, and radio became diminished. Podcasting has an enormous opportunity here to market itself to new audiences. Now, in the case of radio, an industry designed around selling the power of advertising did not take its own medicine. If we believe advertising works, then maybe we should try some. All right, let's wrap this up. I really appreciate the gift of your time and attention to this article and to last week's part one. So a bit long maybe, but you know, Brian and I really care about this stuff. And as I said at the beginning of last week's podcast, I've seen this movie before and I know how it turns out when poor choices are made. But podcasting has the time and the agency to make better choices to ensure the vitality of the medium. I'm Tom Webster. Thanks again for listening to this article, Radio's 7 Warnings for the Podcast Industry, Part 2. This episode was built using Spooler and hosted on Omni Studio by Triton Digital. Thanks for listening.